graduated to the high life. Ball players, rap stars, addicted to the limelight. MC and May got you feeling like a champion. The city never sleeps, better slip you an ambient.
Everybody, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. Thanks for joining us today. Lots to get to today here on the program. Lots of baseball. We're going to be talking New York Yankees today. As you know, we're doing our wraparound of Major League Baseball series, podcast series, and we're going to be doing the Yankees today with George Kurtz from SiriusXM Radio. He also writes for rotoexperts.com. So that's on the agenda today. Lots to get to. We'll preview what they did in 2006, what they're going to do in 2016, and we'll look a little bit backwards. I figure in order to look forward, you have to look backwards, and so we're going to be doing that today with the Yankees. Lots to get into. This is an interesting team, to say the least. Their behavior over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years has been very interesting, almost schizophrenic, but the expectations for the Yankees is always high. They're expected to always win, and it pains me to say it because I am a Red Sox fan, but I think Joe Girardi and Brian Cashman in general have done a really good job recently of not behaving like the evil empire that the Red Sox love to claim them to be, this gigantic spending monster. Now, granted, they have spent a ton of money and even to spend a ton of money recently, but it's not like they're going out like they did in the Steinbrenner days and buying the top five players every single offseason, which it seems like way back when it was like that. And it probably wasn't, but nonetheless, they seem to be doing how they are able to pitch the way they pitch specifically has always surprised me. Every single year I talk to George on the about the Yankees, and every single trade deadline I always say they need to get pitching, they need to trade for pitching, and he always tells me I'm wrong, and I always disagree with him because my argument is always that they need to get that ace in order to be able to be World Series contenders, and I don't think the Yankees have done that. But the fact that George at least has an argument about it is that the Yankees have pitched well consistently year after year after year. And you look at the names on that rotation and everything like, and I just don't know how they pitch as well as they do. And I think the staff and the coaches need to be given credit for that. They have better pitching probably than the Red Sox did in 2015, but they pitched significantly better. And the year before that they did. And the year before that, it's just somehow the Yankees just pitch well, even though the names on their rotation, they haven't gone out and bought David Price. They didn't go out and buy Max Scherzer. They haven't bought those top-flight ace pitchers in quite some time, ever since C.C. Sabathia, which is looking like a pretty ugly mistake. And that's probably why they haven't, because they signed Sabathia. They re-signed Sabathia, and it's not looking good, and it's going to probably look worse, and we'll get into that today. So that's on the agenda today. I want to pull a little bit of a Ben Roethlisberger right now. I pulled my lat the other day. I also cut my finger cooking dinner the other last night. So I'm playing injured today. And I want to moan and complain. If somehow George gets the best of me, if all of his arguments are stronger than mine today, or if I just ask bad questions, I'm playing injured. I'm going to give it 110%. I'm shot up. The pain meds are going. I've got triple the caffeine and quadruple the sugar today. But if somehow I come off not quite doing quite as well, it's because I'm just injured. I'm injured. I'm playing hurt today, and that's what I'm sticking with in case something goes wrong. But let me bring George Kurtz into the program here. George, thanks a lot for coming on today. It's bitter cold up here in Boston. How you guys doing down there closer to New York City?
Well, it's not much warmer down here. It's cold here also, getting a snowstorm over the weekend. But, hey, spring training is less than a month away.
Absolutely. Spring training is never close enough. I can't wait till the Red Sox truck leaves Fenway Park. Every single year, it's a story. It probably shouldn't be, but it is. It's a tradition up here that they televise, and they almost have a party. And I guess in Boston, all you need is an excuse to have a party. But the Fenway truck leaves to drive down to Florida, and that is, I guess, the media day in which baseball actually begins. But it's not that far away. Let's look at the Yankees, and I want to look at – obviously, I want to preview what they did this season, but I want to review a little bit about what they did last year and even in the last couple years. In the last few years, they have spent a lot of money. To say that they're not spending would be silly, but I still don't think the Yankees are spending anywhere near that they used to. Over the last 2 or 3 off seasons, What do you think the impact of that was on their 2015 season? And, of course, we'll look ahead to 2016. But what they've done over the last two or three off seasons, how do you think that had an impact on what they really haven't done this one?
Well, when you look at the Yankees, I mean, you're right. They still spend money. And just a couple of years ago, they spent money on Ellsbury, McCann, Beltran, bringing three guys. They haven't spent money this season, you know, really to, more starting their own guys, stuff like that. The Yankees are, I think what you're seeing what Cashman's doing is they're trying to rebuild without doing a complete stripped-down rebuild. In other words, they're trying to still remain competitive, which they should be able to do. And what I mean by that is, are they a World Series contender? No. Are they a playoff contender? Sure. With the extra wild card, they should be contending for that spot. But it allows them where, you know, they're trying to buy their time. Wait for Teixeira's contract to end. Wait for Sabathia's contract to end. Wait for A-Rod's contract to end. Then they can supplement, put other guys in. You know, Greg Byrne, we know, is eventually going to take over Teixeira. Aaron Judge will eventually take over for Aaron for Carlos Beltran. You know, and what happens with the you know, A-Rod as far as probably just money saved there. And maybe in a year, 2 years, they'll go out and spend again. I don't think you're ever going to see them spend like they did under George, you know, George Steinbrenner. I don't think that'll happen. Howe is much more conservative that way. You see, yeah, he's trying to bring up their younger players. You know, I mentioned Greg Byrne. I mentioned Aaron Judge. We'll talk Luis Severino. They have several other guys as well. But I think it's sort of a new age Yankees. Now that they're not going to, you know, they're not going to be the New York Mets counterpart. They're not spend at all. They will spend, but they're not going to be with Dodgers either, trying to buy every little thing. And they're not going to be at the Yankees of the 90s and early 2000s where they get out all these mega contracts. You're not going to see that either.
And I contend that the Red Sox, the fans, we're not as aggressive as we used to be. And winning three World Series in the last, what, 15 years, 10 years, 11 years, whatever it's been, it's understanding. We're, you know, we didn't have a World Series for a very long time. We were desperate and angry. That Aaron Boone home run broke my heart a few years back against the Yankees. But we finally won a bunch of World Series. And I think fans, I mean, the Red Sox have come in last place three times in, what, the last 4 years. And the fans, while, of course, they're upset, they're passionate, they're upset, they're angry, but I don't think they're as angry as they were 20 years ago when we were still desperate for a title. Is it the same way for the Yankees? The Yankees have had tons of titles forever, but once the Jeter kind of generation, they won all those titles, are Yankees fans a little less angry? Because they don't go out and spend like they did with Steinbrenner. Steinbrenner seemed desperate to win and bought any veteran he could. Are Yankees fans a little bit more accepting? Because it does feel to me that the Yankees want to be competitive. They need to at least be competitive. But I don't hear the anger and the furiousness that I would think you would get, the fact that the Yankees don't try to make that push at the trade deadline. Is there a friendlier fan base right now so Cashman can maybe be a little less tentative? It allows him to not have to go get Cespedes, or he has to go get Upton, or he should have gone out and got Price. Is the environment a little bit more friendly that allows him to be a little bit more intelligent? Because 7-year deals for pitchers really don't work out. But that's a deal that the Yankees did with Sabathia, and it seems like if the fan base was angrier or the Yankees felt more urgency, maybe David Price would be a Yankee and not a Red Sox.
Well, I think you're missing a couple of things here. One, the Yankees made the playoffs last year. Why is the fan base going to get mad? How do you get mad when you're making the playoffs? The second thing is, I think the Yankees are done as far as those big contracts, at least for a while, until they get some of the bad taste out of their mouth. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. I don't know if I can – how do you justify C.C. Sabathia's contract? Is winning one World Series enough to justify what he's been at the back end? Same with A-Rod. Is one World Series enough? You know, I had someone ask me back probably 4 or 5 years ago, you know, how many World Series would be enough to justify their contract? I said two. You win two, I think you're okay. You live with the bad back end, you know, and that's the way it is. But the Yankees are only getting one. Although A-Rod had a solid, actually above solid year last year, Sabathia did not. You know, so I think Cashman's done handing out those kind of deals to players of that age. You know, I think if the Yankees had a need for an outfielder, you might have seen him go after Justin Upton. You know, you might have seen that a little more interesting this year. But since they didn't, they, you know, losers go after him. If there was somebody else out there that position of need, and the age is right. I guess what you see with the Yankees, they're not going to give out any more 5-, 6-, 7-year contracts of 30-year-olds. Don't think that's happening anymore. You know, not unless, you know, they just really figure, for some reason, their analytics will tell you that, okay, these guys are going to be okay until their late 30s. You know, the Yankees sort of go with the once bitten, twice shy theory. right? A-Rod's had some problems, to put it nicely. Sabathia's been, you know, pretty close to a disaster since he opted out and the Yankees decided to re-sign him. That was obviously a mistake. You know, so I think that's what you see the Yankees do. I think they will spend money, but now it's going to have to be for the right player. And that's going to be a little different from what the Yankees have done in the past. I think they're much more interested in bringing up their younger players and seeing what they can do now before they worry about going for the big money free agents.
And I guess I would translate that to be, A, you don't need Upton and Suspez, like you said. Your outfield is fine. And also, B, that while you didn't go after Suspedes or Upton, Bryce Harper has a pretty decent chance to still be a Yankee. They're going to be in on that hunt, I would imagine. That's sort of what you're saying?
Well, I mean, what is Harper, free agent after 2018 or 2019? What's that contract going to be like? I mean, literally, I'm not making a joke here. Are we talking $500 million? You know, we're talking $500 million. I think it'll be close. And therefore, assuming it is that high, you're talking Yankees, sure, they'll be in the market. The Dodgers, I can definitely see them being in the market. Is there even anybody else who can compete? I mean, really, is there anybody else who can compete if he's going to get $50 million, you know, a 10-year, $500 million contract, $400 million contract? You know, so yes, I think the Yankees will be involved. But, you know, a lot of things have to happen. Harper still has to be a very good player. I'm sure he will be. The Yankees have to have a need for an outfielder. Quite possibly in 2 to 3 years, yeah, they will be. You know, so, but to answer your question, yes, I expect the Yankees to be involved in that. And when I say involved, I mean seriously involved. Not on the outside peripheral, because they need someone. The Yankees need someone that fans are going to want to come see. They don't really have that player right now. Who do you want to see if you're a Yankee fan? I mean, even if Calgary fan, we got to go to the stadium so we can see this player. And no other pitchers, really. You know, Tanaka is their best pitcher, but, you know, he's not Roger Clemens in his prime. He's not Randy Johnson. You're not really going to see him. You know, it'd be nice if he's starting the day you're there. Great. But, you know, he's not letting up any scoreboards. Hitters? I mean, okay, do you want to see A-Rod because he's chasing some numbers? But, you know, we know the grab has been lost in that because of what's happened with him in his career. And who else? So that's what it comes down to. Now, things might be differently, Chris. If Aaron Judge comes up and he is the new Giancarlo Stanton, he's hitting long bombs, okay, then they might have that player. But assuming they don't, yes, I think the Yankees have to be in consideration for that because they need a reason for people to watch the YES Network, watch those games, and to come to the stadium and pay those prices.
Yeah, and I don't think Aaron Judge is that kind of player, even anything close to it, though he is a highly touted prospect, and anything is possible. You know, prospects, as well or as poorly as they play in the minors, the major leagues is a different hurdle altogether, and you're right, he could become that. Again, personally, I don't think he will be. I don't think he has that kind of ability, but it could be. I agree. And it is. It's a crazy world out there right now, and it just makes me wonder about Steinbrenner not being there, the sons rather than the fathers now. The craziness that could go on when I mean, if you're Bryce Harper, you just need to be checking in on Scott Boras, making sure he's healthy, making sure he's eating his vegetables, because in 2018 or 2019, whatever it is, I want Scott Boras 100% healthy and doing his job as good as he ever was, because you're right, it could be $500 million. I mean, if the A-Rod push way back when it was going to the Rangers, how Peter Gammons was flouting what Scott Boras was selling, which was not only can he help your organization, not only is he a great player, but he can build businesses around the park, and he's an economy all of his own. I remember that being the argument for A-Rod. Bryce Harper, I'm sure we're going to hear tons of weird things like that coming out where it is going to be insane. $500 million would not surprise me. It really wouldn't. When you see what Trout got now, 3 or 4 years from now, if Harper has another couple of years like he did this year, yeah, that number does not sound ridiculous at all. It sounds ridiculous, and yet it sounds reasonable. Let's look at 2015 before we look ahead to 2016. Let me first ask you about Tanaka, because while, like you said, he's not really the ace because of his elbow, he can be, I suppose. What did you expect from him in 2015, and what were your expectations in comparison to what you actually got from him last season?
Well, you know, with Tanaka, it's hard because we all know that he's pretty much, you know, he's an injury waiting to happen. You know, it's a matter of when. He's going to tear that elbow eventually. It could be this year, 2 years, 5 years. We just don't know when. So that's always going to be his bugaboo. He had a pretty solid year last year, but once again, only threw 154 innings. You know, and it's very little to think, you know, he's going to go much higher than that. He will almost certainly require a DL at some point during the season, even if it's not for the elbow, but for maintenance and whatever the like. His numbers last year, 3.51 ERA. Nice, almost a strikeout per inning. Solid, but he's not an ace. And I think last year you saw that it took him a while to let it go, to trust that elbow. Now, maybe he does, he trusts it more from the get-go this season. Maybe. But he's like, okay, hey, the tears are tears. What am I going to do? I'm playing baseball. I'm pitching the way I want to pitch. Yeah, but he wasn't throwing as many fastballs last year. Wasn't throwing as many splitters. You can look at the percentages from what he did the year before. You know, he changed because he was worried about the elbow. He wasn't throwing as hard. Same thing. It's like he didn't have that extra adrenaline flowing there. So I think when you look at the Tanaka, you know, you're looking at fantasy-wise, I think he's in a starting pitcher too. But you're going to have to realize, you know, you're not getting 200 innings from him. That would be highly unlikely. Yeah, and there's a pretty good chance that, hey, eventually that elbow could tear this year. It may not, you know, but it could, and you lose it for the season. So you need to be very, very careful. Bottom line is, Chris, he's not an ace. You know, so I'm not going to risk it. Fantasy-wise, I'm not going to go out and, oh, I've got to get Tanaka. Because he's not the ace. He's not a great player. And there's a chance he could go out at pretty much any time.
And going into this season, 2016, are the expectations and the risks all the same? So you kind of go into 2016 feeling and expecting the same as you did for 2015, or is there something different?
Yeah, I guess if you're an optimist, you like I said, you could be thinking that, hey, okay, last year he got through the year. Pretty much he did end up on the DL for about a month, which is what I expect this year as well. But, you know, he got through the elbow. Okay, listen, the elbow's there. He pitched better as the season went on. I think he was maybe a little bit more comfortable dealing with the injury. And I can buy that. Sure, I think that's an optimistic viewpoint. But like I said, when you look at his numbers from last year, I just don't see a big change. You know, I don't see where he's also going to have a 2.8 ERA and bring it down or have more than a strikeout per inning. I don't see that. I think when you're looking at his numbers, they'll be very similar.
And Mark Teixeira, how surprising was his 2015 for you? And then again, compared to what do you expect from him for 2016?
I don't think his numbers were surprising last year to me at all. With Mark Teixeira, always can he stay healthy? If he can, he's going to hit. And he's going to hit home runs. The average won't be there. But he's going to hit home runs in that ballpark. You know, listen, I don't want to say every one of his home runs in the Yankee Stadium home run, but no doubt a few were. You know, if he's healthy, he'll hit, bottom line. And now he wasn't healthy all last year. He did get hurt again. And once again, I expect the same thing to happen here. When he's in the lineup, yes, he'll be a threat. Nice power hitter, you know, can hit them both sides. I guess you could have some worry that if the Yankees keep Greg Bird on the roster, that maybe Bird plays a little bit more often if the shares rested more often. I could see that happening, but I don't expect Greg Bird to make the roster. I think the Yankees are going to want to play him every day at Triple A rather than, you know, once a week in the majors. So I think the share is going to be fine. I think if he could stay healthy, can I see him hitting 30 home runs? Absolutely. But I don't see him playing 150 games. I think you'll have a DL sit somewhere in there. Something will happen. It may not be the wrist injury like it was 2 years ago, but last year he fouled the ball of his foot. There that goes. You know, he could have a knee injury, whatever it is. Bottom line is with Teixeira, produces when he's in the lineup, but you're looking at 130 games.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him hit 30. He hits 30, it seems like, routinely. He's not the same player he used to be. The like you said, the batting average is significantly lower. The on-base is still there, and the home runs are still there, and the OPS, for the most part, is still there. Though I think he had a better season than we should have expected, but for the fact that he hit over 30 home runs doesn't shock me. Maybe a little surprise, but it doesn't shock me. The one that I think has to shock everybody is this time last season, we were talking about the Yankees may just release A-Rod altogether, and no one would ever claim him because he's A-Rod. You know, when you release a player, you don't take over his contract, so you could actually get A-Rod at a very cheap price if you wanted to, if he was cut by the Yankees. And yet we didn't think, or at least the speculation would be that nobody would want him because it's A-Rod and he's nuclear. There's just nothing you want to touch there. He goes out and has a monster year, hits 33 homers. Is he the shock of maybe the last decade? And do the Yankees make the playoffs if A-Rod hits 6 homers and not 33, or 10 homers and not 33? Was he literally the reason why the Yankees were able to make it to the wild card?
Well, he's not the only reason. Teixeira has to be thrown in there, too. But to answer your question, no, they don't make the playoffs without Gary Thoma. I mean, there's any doubt about that. Now, he did sort of disappear over the second half of the season, and that's not a surprise. He's getting up there in age, you know, long season. He's going to struggle. I think it was maybe a little disappointing because the Yankees didn't play him in the field, especially pretty much after April, or it was the age curve still slowed down like that. And that's going to beg the question this year now, of course, again. Did he slow down because of the long season, or because he's wearing down. You know, and he's going to have a problem with this season out from the get-go. We don't know. But to answer your question, no, they certainly don't make the playoffs without his production. And they, I guess you give the Yankees credit, or maybe you don't, depending on how you look at this whole thing. But although they were cold to him in March, cold to him in April, they warmed up as the season came on. Now, yes, you can, we all know why they warmed up. You know, more than likely it was because of his production. But, you know, maybe they'll realize, you know, Major League Baseball's forgiven him. You heard Rob Manfred, the new commissioner, say over and over again, he's paid his debt. You know, he'll not be against him. Maybe the Yankees will come back to that realization, too. You know, what's the point? You know, what's the point of holding all this stuff against him? You know, everyone else seems to have forgiven him outside a certain fan. And you and I can debate all that we want. I think you and I are in agreement anyway about the steroids. But bottom line is, he's producing first. We can't get rid of him. You know, so, hey, we got to root for the guy. We got to do whatever we can to make him feel comfortable so that he continues to produce first.
And we need to recalibrate expectations now. As I said, maybe I'm going a little far in suggesting that maybe they were would release him last season, but that was discussed in the media at the very least. Whether the Yankees ever considered that seriously, I don't know. I don't have those kinds of sources. But obviously, after what he did last season, the Yankees aren't going to be releasing him this spring training. Going into 2016, what do you need from A-Rod? What are you expecting from A-Rod?
Well, the Yankees are going to use him the same way again. You know, they're going to probably just use him as a DH. The problem this year is the Yankees have a lot of players they'd like to put in that DH spot. You know, there's a reason the Yankees would never want David Ortiz. Now, there's anything wrong with David Ortiz. They don't want Orlando Martinez, for that matter. They don't want a player just to play DH because Beltran needs days off or half days off. Teixeira could use half days off. McCain can use half days off. And now with A-Rod eating up that spot, it's hard to do that. Yeah, so that could be why the Yankees really don't want that. Listen, if he stays healthy, so does Teixeira. I see no reason why he can't hit, let's say, 25 home runs. I'm not going to go 33 again. I don't think that's going to happen. But I can see 25 home runs happening. You know, 20 home runs, whatever it might be. Could certainly see that. There's no way of really projecting because he's up there. He's plus 40 now. So maybe the second hit will last too much the last season. You know, there's a ton of things to come. Maybe it wasn't a long season. Maybe he is tired. Maybe he's going to act his age. We don't know. You just don't know. But I tend to hit somewhat. The Yankees, I think, will rest him more liberally to keep him as fresh as possible. I mean, Girardi has a really tough for him to do, as I said. He's got to rest all those guys. And the Yankees are also talking about resting Brett Gardner regularly. Because what they're worried about with Gardner is he's sort of in that Derek Jeter mode where he doesn't tell you about his injuries. Just wants to play every day. And they don't think that's healthy for him either, because that's why he had a second half swoon last year. He was hurt and never really told anybody.
And the one thing that I think you got to give credit to the Yankees for is going into last season, I really do think what you got from A-Rod was essential. I mean, if you cut Teixeira in half or you cut A-Rod in half, one of those two things happens and you probably don't make the playoffs. Just in half, you know, go from 33 homers to 12, anything like that from either of those two players, and really you probably miss the playoffs. This year, I don't think that's the case. If you look at the depth and what they've been able to do, Greg Bird surprised me. I saw him as a solid player, but nothing special. He had a really good stretch. He didn't play a ton, but when he did play, he was effective. So now you've got Bird. You traded for Castro. You traded for Aaron Hicks. And now if you want, you can go defense and maybe play some of these big bats at DH, or if you want to put A-Rod third or something like that. It just seems like there's a lot more flexibility. And if you want to get Rev Schneider even in there, it looks like he may be the odd man out. Maybe we'll get to that. But it just looks like the Yankees have a lot more. If A-Rod goes out there and he's awful, he hits 8 home runs, 9 home runs, bats 212, which wouldn't be a stunner. I'm not expecting that maybe, but it wouldn't. I guess it's not an expectation. But there's a lot that they can fill in. If they want to make changes, they can go defense versus offense or vice versa. It seems like you could withstand a bad season from A-Rod or a bad season with Teixeira this year, and I don't really think you could last year. That in and of itself, without them spending any real money, and without doing a ton of things, that alone is a good thing, I would say, for the Yankees. Last question about 2015 before we look at the offseason and move to 2016 and wrap this up. DJ Gregorius, no one can fill Derek Jeter's shoes, and no one expects him to, but there are still expectations at shortstop. You don't have to become Jeter, but you can't be so bad that you're like, wow, that's just an empty hole. What are the thoughts on what you saw from Didi? What is his future? Is he serviceable? Is he below? I don't know. What are your thoughts on what you saw in 2015, and how optimistic are you for 2016?
Oh, I think the A's had to be pretty optimistic about that. I think what you saw from Didi is really is not a surprise. I mean, he struggled in the beginning. His first season in New York, he struggled in April, maybe even part of May. But he ended up batting 265, 9 home runs, 56 ribbies. You know, he was a smattering of stolen bases, and his defense only got better. You know, so I think that's what you're looking for here. I mean, for a while there, Orison, he was part of September. He was their best hitter. He was the one getting on base. So I think the Yankees are happy. He wasn't acquired to be a catalyst to the offense. And the Yankees are relying on Didi to truly win them games with his bat. Well, that's a mistake. But the Yankees know that. He was brought on because he was pretty cheap to acquire. He has the ability to play a very good defense, and he did. And he's going to hit a little bit. He's not an automatic out. He's got some pop, not a lot of pop. So that's why the Yankees acquired Didi. I think from what they saw with him, they're very happy. And I see no reason why they shouldn't be. I just say, would you like a better bat? Sure, but not every team's going to have, a top-notch shortstop that can hit, field, run, do everything. You know, Carlos Correa don't come along very often. And they just don't have that now. You know, they may have been a little bit spoiled with Jeter. But, you know, when you look at compared to his past couple of years to Didi, Jeter had no pop for the last couple of years. He had no range. Didi's a better player than Jeter was the past 3 years, but is he going to be anywhere near to what Jeter was in his prime? No.
No. And that's the expectations game, and that's something you got to play from a PR perspective. Minimize your expectations, and as long as they're reasonable, Didi is a more than adequate shortstop. I always talk about that with the Red Sox with Jackie Bradley. He wasn't able to hit well enough a few years back to even get in a lineup. But I still think for most teams, especially small and mid-market teams, Jackie Bradley could be a nice, solid, good center fielder. It's just in Boston, the expectations are so high for players offensively that it just causes problems, even if he's a serviceable player. I look at Didi kind of the same way. Looking at the offseason, I don't blame the Yankees for signing Chapman. I think the Reds were just desperate and panicked. So whoever was able to take advantage of that, I give them all the credit in the world, and it turns out it was the Yankees, unfortunately. I would have loved for any other team, preferably in the National League, to have done it, but I don't blame anyone for adding Chapman at the price that it was, because in my opinion, it was basically free. They got him for what I essentially consider nothing. So I don't blame the Yankees for that. But that being said, Justin Wilson was really good. You traded him away to the Pirates, I believe it was, and how much better can the bullpen get? I've heard this talked about by Joel Sherman and some other people on Major League Baseball Network and so forth. While Chapman is an upgrade on basically everybody, is this bullpen really any better than it was last year to the point where it's meaningful? It's better, but is it significantly better considering how good Justin Wilson actually was? I don't think everyone knows about him, but he was a good reliever from what I could tell.
I think I really don't have much to add here. I mean, you're pretty much right. Chapman will certainly help me, even if they got it for free. I don't think Chapman is really looking to add another bullpen piece, but when the price came on Chapman came so far down, this is really more of an indictment on the Reds. And how do you not trade him last All-Star break when you might have had something? You know, you could have gotten good pieces for him. Now you got, maybe somebody hit it as a reserve for you, but nothing big. So I think Chapman just took advantage of the market there. Now he will take some backs. Assuming Chapman does get suspended for whatever amount they do, he'll take some heat in the end, but hey, the team is better. But you're right. When Justin Wilson was traded to Detroit, I was shocked. I was like, why? Why? I mean, and Kirsten actually said, this is the most stunning thing, well, we wanted to trade before he reached his arbitration years. Really? This is what you're worried about with Justin Wilson? Even if he won his arbitration cases, they weren't going to be big wins. Not for really a situational reliever, but he had a very good year for the Yankees last year. Are the Yankees better? Sure. Chapman's still better than Wilson, but you're right. They're not, immensely better than Wilson. Well, wow. But I think what you're also seeing here with the Yankees is they realize their starting rotation is going to be a lot of five-plus innings, six at most, and out. And now they'll have for those games where, hey, we can throw Betances in the seventh or Miller in the eighth, Chapman in the ninth, or whatever you want, however you want to work it. Chapman's going to close. Maybe Miller goes on the seventh, and there's a lot of lefties coming up. So we can afford to those kids to leave early and still have lockdown games. It also allows them, hey, we can give these pitchers a day off. McCarthy's going to have a day off. Still got Miller and Chapman. Chapman can have a day off. Still got Miller and McCarthy, so on. A lot of mixing matching there. We give guys normal rest. Girardi, I mean, he killed the bullpen last year, mainly because he didn't trust the other guys. He was using the Yankees to give 6 runs in the ninth inning. Also, the other team scores 2 runs, but Thomas is in the game. What are you doing? If you can't trust these guys to lock down a 6-run game, they shouldn't be on the team. Find somebody else. You know, I guess they came a little closer, but you could see it as the season was going on. I'm sure you and I talked about it, that he was killing the bullpen. And it caught up, but Thomas did tire at the end. But bottom line is, like I said, I agree with you. Chapman, good acquisition, too cheap to pass up. But in the end, it's a name. So that's why we all think they're great. But losing Justin Wilson means, sure, you're better, but not as much as you could have been.
Yeah, and that's – I remember Joe Torre used to get just shredded for how he essentially destroyed the arms of their bullpen. And people look at it like it's a bad decision or that the manager doesn't know what he's doing. But I think what you said hits it, and that happened up here in Boston as well, which is if you don't trust a guy to go out there and get the outs, then you go with who you trust. And granted, you don't want to put him out there as often as you do or as often or let him stay out there as long. But John Farrell in Boston, he just didn't have the bullpen guys last season, so he kept running out to Zawa, who eventually broke down. You keep running out the same 2 guys, and you just don't feel comfortable throwing out those other 3 or 4 unless it's an 8 or 9-run lead. I think that's pretty common, and I think managers get blamed for the fact that, look, if he puts a guy in there and he fails, maybe the manager doesn't get criticized. But the fact is, you still lost. If the manager doesn't get criticized because he put the bullpen guy, the proper guy out there, and he fails, you don't necessarily get as criticized as you do when you put a guy out there that's tired or you overwork somebody. But the fact is, the goal is to win, and if you don't have confidence in those other guys, then you end up losing anyway, and so the manager doesn't want to do that. That happens all the time. I think Joe Torre probably got shredded a little bit more than he should have way back when. John Farrell got that blame here, and I think his replacement when he went out with cancer probably got a little bit of that as well. Wrapping that up, A, losing Adam Warren, is that meaningful? And B, what are you expecting, and how good or how bad, or what did you think of the Stalin Castro trade?
Well, losing Ward is meaningful, sure. Ward really never got as much love as he should have. He was a swing man, and he was so valuable. You know, you and I have been doing this, talking about Yankees and Red Sox for a while. He was similar to what Tim Wakefield could give the Red Sox. You know, a guy who could start, could relieve for you, and take up valuable innings. You know, you don't always want to blow out your bullpen in a game that you know, either you start up after 2 innings or you're getting blown out. Warren would come in there and do that. Yeah, starting gets hurt, but doesn't need to go in with DL, miss a start, Warren can start for you and give you 5-6 solid innings there. So, yeah, it's certainly valuable. It's a loss. But in the end, I mean, how can the Yankees not make this deal? You get Starlin Castro. No doubt he has issues. You know, we know he has issues, especially, attention span issues. He's made a lot of boneheaded plays. But you're getting a young player, and the Yankees want to get younger. The guy has talent. I don't know how he's going to be able to play much better in New York than he did in Chicago. Certainly, I don't see him hitting as many home runs in New York. You know, we could make fun of the stadium all we want. Left center is still left center. It's deep. But if he can hit, you know, he's going to bat 300. He's going to play some second base. There's even some noise that he could play some third base now. You know, Chase Headley doesn't figure things out. So I think it's a good acquisition for the Yankees. And the Cubs may be thinking the same thing. Good acquisition for them. They get the swing man they need. But what Warren can do, it sort of rids them of Castro. When I say rids them, I don't think in a bad way, but it opens up for them to get Javier Baez some more playing time and stuff like that because they had a glut of middle infielders. So I think the trade actually works out well for both teams.
And the Yankees spending, I find it almost hilarious that Brian Cashman could say with a straight face that he had to trade a reliever before he hits arbitration. I mean, that is hilarious. But would you have rather have seen the Yankees keep Warren and sign Ben Zobrist and give him the years he needed and spend whatever it was to outspend the Cubs to get him? Assuming you could do that, and maybe he was always going to the Cubs, I don't know. But assuming the Yankees could have offered what they needed to get him, would you rather Warren and Zobrist, or you like what they've done here and they add Stalin Castro?
I'd rather have Castro, mainly because I don't want to give Zobrist those kind of years. He's a valuable player. You know, I think I could certainly help, but I don't want to give him those kind of years. Take a chance. Once again, he's up there in age. The Yankees wanted to get younger. It's hard to argue with that as they are an older team. I think they did well here. You know, Zobrist, I don't think Zobrist was ever coming to New York anyway. The Mets tried to get him. The Mets offered him more than Chicago did, and he wouldn't go to the Mets. Now the Mets and the Yankees are too different. Maybe Zobrist would have wanted to go to the Yankees, but I doubt it. Especially at this point in time, the Mets are a team on the rise. The Yankees are not.
Yeah, definitely. Let's look at 2016, and you're looking at the rotation, and I pretty much said it earlier. Somehow the Yankees just pitch well, even though I've never loved Ivan Nova. I thought he was a solid guy. But they've managed to just be competitive, and even though the staff isn't filled with high-priced free agents, though, again, CeCe Sabathia at one point was both sought after and highly priced and extremely effective. He's not anymore. But you look at this rotation, Tanaka, again, he is what he is. Can they do what they did in 2015 and 14 and 13 and all these years in 2016? And specifically, I look at this and I say, all they need to be is good. You don't need to be the best pitching team in all of baseball. With that, I think their offense is plenty good enough to make them competitive, which is what I think they were last year. But in order to do that, you probably need effective seasons from Severino and Pineda. That's my thought. What are your thoughts on what you have in your rotation, what to expect from them, and who needs to perform in order for them to just keep you in the hunt to make the wild card?
Well, the Yankees bugaboo is going to be their starting rotation this year. I mean, and it's only because every one of those guys, except for Severino, got hurt last year. Everyone was on DL. Tanaka missed about a month. Pineda, same thing. Eovaldi missed the end of the season. You know, and CeCe, we know, has his issues between the injury, the knee, the drinking problem now. Who knows what's going on there? And he's ineffective anyway. And Ivan Nova is coming back from Tommy John surgery. You know, so there's, you know, that's going to be tough to overcome. But a bigger problem for the Yankees is, after I said Ivan Nova, that's six starters. They don't have much after that. You know, they really don't. So that's going to be tough if a couple of guys go down. Now, you know, we both talked about Brian Cashman trading Justin Wilson, and he traded him because of the arbitration. That's what Cashman said. It wasn't really a joke there. But they did receive a couple of low-end starters from Detroit. And Cashman also said depth in the organization for starting pitching depth. And apparently one of those, I forget the guy's name, but he could be the SP7. So there is some validation there. I don't think so, mind you. I think it was silly to trade him, but I sort of get it here. I think Cashman's trying to cover himself. I think you'll see Cashman come during the year. He'll be looking for pitchers that are available, lower-end guys. He'll be able to get top-notch guys. The Yankees aren't going to trade their top-notch minor leaguers. So even if a guy comes up, unless that team wants to dump a salary, you know, if San Diego wants to dump James Fields, you know, maybe the Yankees talk to him again, but I don't think they want to pay that price either. So that's going to be their problem, though, Chris. Can all these guys stay healthy and be effective? You know, I mean, does anyone really think CeCe's going to pitch well again? You know, can Eovaldi pitch as well? You know, all of a sudden, pick up from where he left off. He was fantastic at one point. Severino, I think he'll be fine. Can Pineda pitch 180 innings? Can any of these guys pitch 180 innings? You know, I think that's the biggest problem here. Staying healthy, and can any of these guys, I mean, you need at least three of them probably to give you a full season, and that may be tough.
And these days, you need at least six or seven starters to get through a season. So when you look at a lot of teams, you see their six or seven guys fighting for five spots. But you always need, and like you said, Adam Warren was a good swingman. So he could always be that 6/7, bump in there, give you four or five starts in a row if you need it for a DL stint, things like that. But right now, the Yankees do have six. Tanaka won. Sabathia is in there. He's listed on one of the depth charts I was looking at as number two. I find it hard to put him at number two, but nonetheless, he's listed there as two. Pineda, Eovaldi, Severino, and Ivan Nova. Assuming CeCe pitches serviceably, and again, that might be assuming a lot. He really has looked bad at times and good at times. That's, I guess, the question. You don't really know maybe what you're getting. Assuming CeCe pitches well enough where you can keep him in the rotation, Who's the odd man out if everybody's healthy and everyone's pitching at least acceptably?
Well, it more than likely should be CeCe, but it won't be. I mean, his ERA the past three seasons, 4.73, 5.28, 4.78. What is anybody expecting from him? And it's funny, I always laugh at this. There's always outfielders coming into spring training. Oh, because he did this, he'll be fine. Because he's going to learn to pitch in the side of the rubber, he'll be fine. You know, because he lost the weight, he'll be fine. Yeah, guess what, folks? It doesn't matter. All right, he lost his fastball. He's never learned. You know, he's lefty. He's a lefty for pitch forever, but he's never learned to pitch. He's always been able to get by on stuff and blow people away. It's been 3 years. He hasn't learned to pitch. I mean, he can't throw an 89-91 mile per hour fastball up in the zone. It's going to go a long way. He just can't do that. And he refuses to adjust. And that's been his biggest problem, in my opinion, watching him. He just doesn't adjust, doesn't pitch. Move the ball up, move the ball down, in, out, stuff like that. Basic stuff. He's not doing it. He should be the odd man now, but I find it highly unlikely. I think Ivan Nova is going to be your new swingman. You know, I think he also come back from Tommy John surgery. He's been up and down throughout his career, sometimes very good, sometimes not so much. I think the Yankees are going to try to plug him into that, assuming he remains on the team. The Yankees have tried to trade him, too. But there's really been no, not much interest there in a guy who's, like I said, never really turned it on for a full season and only, what, 18 months of PJ surgery. So I don't see him going anywhere. But I think Nova's going to be a swing man, a guy who picks up the long relief role, can give you 3-4 innings, spot when somebody needs it.
And with rookies and prospects, you always want to limit their innings. You don't see them throw 200 innings normally their first year out. Severino has the stuff to be a full-time starter in that Yankees rotation, and if he's throwing even close to what he did it at good parts of last season, he's going to be in there, I assume. But how have you heard anything, or what do you think would be his workload? I would think, like you talked about, maybe he'll skip a start here or there. They'll try to keep his innings limit to some number, but have you heard, or what do you think might be his name? Is he going to throw 170? Will they let him go to 210 if they make the playoffs or something? Have you heard anything about how they may use him?
Well, the Yankees have generally been an arc over that's a little overcautious, but he did throw 160 innings last year between the minor leagues and the majors, so you don't have to be that cautious with them. Now, do I think they should? Sure. You know, you mentioned, where do they do make the playoffs? And you need him to throw 210, 220. Well, you know, you could finish. He's right now their number five starter. So he's probably going to make some starts anyway. But eventually, you're going to need him to be in there every 5 days. But, you know, you could be in April. Generally, you have more off days. So you could skip a start here, skip a start there. Around the All-Star break, you may be able to give him 2 weeks off. You know, and you do that, that saves innings. You know, you and I talked about this at Strasburg. Back in that year when they sat him in the playoffs. They screwed up by not being, doing this during the season where they could have rested him. I don't think the Yankees will make that mistake. I think if they feel, and we don't know the for sure if they do this, but if they feel that he has an innings limit of 180 or 200, whatever it might be, I think we'll be able to work around it. But once again, Chris, doesn't this assume that everyone else is healthy? And that's going to be the hard part. Can you sit, Sonny Severino, who in my mind probably is their best pitcher, can you sit your best pitcher if you're in a struggle to make the play? If you don't get up to a hot start, you know, if they struggle in April, if come Girardi, the All-Star, like you need to win games, and he's pitching well, can you sit your best pitcher? I can also see Girardi thinking, hey, I got to win games now. I worry about September in September.
Yeah, I'm looking at Adam Warren, and again, he's not a great pitcher, but he would give you at least 4 or 5 good starts. If you had to throw him out there for 30, you're not going to love what you get. But for as a swing man, middle man, long relief kind of guy, he could give you 3 or 4 or 5 good starts. And when you look at this rotation, you've got 6 guys that can't start, but all of them have concerns or possible durability issues or performance issues. I actually look at the rotation, and even though they do go 6 deep, I think they're probably 1 or 2 pitches short. I mean, is Sabathia going to stay healthy? Like you said, you almost have to assume that Tanaka will go in the DL for a couple weeks. Pedro Martinez for the Red Sox used to always miss at least 15, if not 30 days a year. You factored it in. You knew that Pedro wasn't going to be able to go 30 starts and 230 innings. It just wasn't the way it was going to be. You have to assume that with Tanaka, too. So you look at this, 6 starters. I think you're a starter or 2 short. So if you had an Adam Warren that gave you, let's say, 7 or 8 starts, you had another guy that gave you 3 or 4, that depth alone would I think, fill what is the issue there. To me, that's what their rotation looks like. It looks like their 10 or 12 starts may be thin, and unless someone either outperforms what you expect or everyone stays healthier than you probably should assume, then that is going to be an issue. I would think maybe the Yankees either might need minor league help or they may need to lean on that bullpen a lot or something. It seems to me like there's some innings there that could be impactful that maybe they don't have the pitching to fill.
Yeah, we already discussed this. I agree. The Yankees certainly have depth issues in their bullpen, depth issues in the starting rotation. I don't think they can rely on any of these guys to stay healthy. Yeah, I doubt it can happen. You mentioned most teams need 7 to 8 starters as the season goes on. Most teams. You know, everybody gets hurt. Everybody's thinking you're going to have preventative maintenance. It is different nowadays than it was 20, 30 years ago anyway. Back then, you had a sore arm, and you're pitching through it. Nowadays, you got a sore arm, you're on the DL. You know, whether it's major or not, you're on the DL. So the Yankees are going to need that, and they don't have it right now. There's no doubt they don't have it right now. But I expect Cashman to work the phones. He'll look for guys that are, you know, let's figure out some bargain basement. We've seen him be able to do this in past years. You know, maybe he can do it again. Maybe he can't. But bottom line, yes, the starting rotation is going to be a problem for the Yankees.
looking at the offensive side of things, I don't want to get into any specifics of all the players, but it looks like while they're not the best offense in the American League East, it's a good offense, to say the least. Is there any one key player, though, where if he's out, you're screwed, or if he has a monster season, you're great, or is it a collection and you just hope you get what you need from all of them? Because I look at this offense, and I don't see one player being out for a long period of time or having a horrible season. I don't see that killing the Yankees like it could for some other teams. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I don't think the Yankees are one player dependent. They do depend on Ellsbury and Gardner to get on base. And if you only get the one player who, if he has a big year, the Yankees could be very good offensively, it's Ellsbury, who pretty much was a nothing last year. Very concerning. And he does seem to be somewhat of an every other year player. So if you believe in that, I don't necessarily do, then he could have a better year this year. But the Yankees certainly can't be happy with what they're getting production-wise from him. You know, Gardner, same thing. They gotta, if he can not have a good season, if they can both have good seasons, you talk to two jackrabbits on the bases, that causes problems. That means they might get to see a lot of fastballs. This year, I get to see a lot of fastballs. More predictable baseball for you there. But as for injuries, yeah, I don't think any one player gets hurt. It's a big deal. You know, if two or three, you know, okay, then we have some problems there. But any one, I think they can survive it. They should score runs. You know, certainly in that ballpark in Yankee Stadium, they're going to hit their home runs. You know, McCann, A-Rod, DeSherry are all going to hit home runs. Beltran, so his last year with the Yankees, maybe his last year in baseball, he was good at the second half of last year. He was by far their best player, probably from July on. You know, can he do that for one last full year, one more full ride, would certainly help. You know, but I think that's probably asking a lot from him. Like I said, there's nobody there that they go down and they're going to be screwed. They have pretty good depth, you know, for the first time in a while. Another player would be nice if Chase Headley could figure out how to hit the ball again, not to mention figure out how to throw the ball to first base.
And what do you think about Aaron Hicks? I thought that was an interesting addition, a depth one, I would think. But like I talked about before, you can move some bats to DH or you can go heavy defense if you want to go that way. I like the addition, but I don't think he's essential. But then again, maybe he is essential because of the depth. How much of a role do you think he'll play?
I think that was a great baseball trade. You know, we have extra Yankees have extra catching. They'll look to Minnesota who had extra outfielders. And it makes perfect sense for both teams. So I think that was a pretty good deal there. Yeah, you mentioned it. I don't think all of a sudden, oh, we've got Hicks, and then we're going to win the American League East. No, but it gives you that. With a guy who's going to start a couple of times a week also. You know, he's not going to be a pure, you know, he only plays when someone gets hurt. No, he's going to play. Yankees want to see what they have here. And remember, Yankees do have an opening in the outfield next year. You know, once Beltran's gone. We all assume it's Aaron Judge. But if you're right and you're very, very lowly, then maybe Judge isn't ready yet. Or maybe he's not going to be that player. Well, then Hicks can help you out there. Now, can he? You know, so I think it's a good move all around for the Yankees. And let's also not forget, I know the Cashman is done making trades. And one player who could be moved that may have the most value is Brett Gardner. You know, so Hicks coverage is there too, just in case you are able to move Gardner. You know, maybe you can move Gardner for a starting pitcher. That would make some sense, you know, because for a couple of reasons. One, you know, you need that starting pitcher. You and I have already broken that down. They need another starting pitcher. Gardner might be able to bring you a strong number two. Hicks can now slot in there. You know, an outfield is a little easier to find. And maybe the Yankees think Aaron Judge just needs a half a season in the minors, and then he can be called up, you know, that he's that close to being ready. I don't know if I agree with that. You know, I think Judge may actually need another full season, maybe even beyond that, to really before he become a major league player. But the Yankees may feel differently. And trading Gardner, like I said, he has probably the most value as far as contract and his ability to still play the game. So Gardner could be moved. We did hear about that. I just don't think Cashman's done. I think he realizes this is an okay team right now, maybe a little bit above average, but there's still work to be done.
Yeah, and with Judge, I think he could probably be serviceable now. More time, I don't think ever, for the most part, doesn't hurt prospects. In some cases, maybe it does. Maybe Ryan Harward spent too much time in the minors for the Phillies way back when. But I don't think time normally hurts a player. But Judge wouldn't step in and all of a sudden be a number four hitter. Even if he becomes that one day, he wouldn't be a number four, you know, type of guy. Rookies just don't perform in their first seasons, even as well as mediocre players. I mean, if they are league average, that's actually a pretty nice season for a rookie. So from that perspective, if Judge was league average, that would probably be more than you should expect. So to me, that's kind of how you look at it from that perspective. With the trade for Castro, because, again, I don't think that was a dump trade by the Cubs. I think the Yankees giving up Warren, again, he's not an all-star, but he's something at least that can be meaningful in a depth situation. have the Red Sox given up on Ruff Schneider, or what happened there? Because by adding Castro and being happy with Didi Gregorius, it doesn't look like Ruff Schneider has much of a place anymore. And their outfield is pretty full anyway. And then with Judge coming along as well, it seems like they had a guy who maybe could play, and they made moves as if they've decided he's not their future. What are your thoughts on what's happened and how it impacts him?
Well, I think you can look at this in a couple of different ways. Now, I'm the Yankee guy. I watch all the Yankee games. Girardi barely gave Ruff Schneider a chance last year. You know, so there is something there that I think sometimes, and I think it goes to a lot of in sports in general, when a guy has a reputation that he can't do something, well, now you got to prove he can. And Ruff Schneider's reputation was that he's not a good defensive second baseman. You know, and the game I saw, he was okay. He was far from terrible. But the Yankees never really gave him a shot. I think it's one of those perceptions there. But even if Ruff Schneider, if they thought he was the future, I'm not so sure you could pass up on this deal for Castro. Yeah, I think it comes down to that, too. I think there's still a good trade that made sense for the Yankees. And I'm not saying they ripped off Chicago, not in the least. I think Warren's a valuable player. You know, so I think it was a good fair baseball deal. You mentioned in the beginning of the show, Ruff Schneider, about who's the odd man out, that's going to be Ruff Schneider. You know, I think Dustin Ackley will be on the team, and I think Ackley gets the nod over Ruff Schneider, mainly because he can play second, can play the outfield, and maybe more importantly, can play first base with the charity of the break. You know, this is McKay doesn't have to play first base. Headley doesn't have to play first base when you have no third baseman. So I think Ackley makes the team over Ruff Schneider. I think the Yankees, in a perfect world, would love to trade Ruff Schneider. But the problem is he hasn't shown enough to be the main attraction. He had to be a secondary piece. And that may be what's holding up any kind of deal for him now.
Yeah, I think that's similar to Jackie Bradley Jr. in Boston. He could be a serviceable, a very good contributor to a small or medium market team, but he had hit so poorly that you just couldn't get any value for him. So either you had to give him away or you had to keep him. It seems like maybe Ruff Schneider fits that description as well. Or like you said, maybe it's a bigger trade and he's a second piece to it, which bigger trades as a second piece, that doesn't happen all that often. Fantasy sports, yes. Major League Baseball, not so much. Looking at it, wrapping it up here, how do the Yankees compare to the rest of the AL East as of today? We're talking Wednesday, January 20th. There's still players out there. There's still plenty of offseason to go. But as of Wednesday, January 20th, how do you think the Yankees compare to the rest of the AL East and their chances of a wild card?
Well, the chances of a wild card, I think they'll be in the mix. Like you said, there's still moves we made. There'll be trades in season. Who gets hurt? Who doesn't get hurt? Predictions are always fun, but we really never know what's going to happen. I think they'll compete. You know, are they the leader? I doubt it. I don't know really who. If I had to pick a team that I think is going to win the East right now, I'd probably go Boston. But I don't think they're going to run away with it either. Toronto, I'm not really in love with their pitching staff either. And they had a great season last year, and they're going to try and bludgeon people to death this year with those bats. And maybe they'll be successful doing that, but maybe not. You know, Boston might have the best overall team they're going to hit. I like the pitching moves they've made. To Tampa Bay, they're the anti-Toronto, right? Can they do it all with pitching, with minimal hitting? I find that hard to believe. And Baltimore, they're the same team, right? They weren't very good last year, and they lost 10. I don't feel they're going to be very good this year. So I think Baltimore is really not in the mix here. Right now, I'd say it's between Toronto and Boston for the lead, with the Yankees in third. Trying to fight for that second wild card. But like I said, if the Yankees can stay healthy in their starting rotation, this could easily change. If Toronto suffers an injury or two, could change. Same thing with Boston. I think it'll be relatively close. But right now, that's how I feel. Yankees middle of the pack.
Yeah, I agree with you with the Orioles. It's difficult to predict Machado having the same kind of monster season he did. Maybe he is. He's in his prime, so he should have three or four seasons of that. But when you have a year that good, I just assume that most guys can't do it. Even the best of the best don't normally put together those kinds of monster seasons year after year after year. Somewhere has to be the best year. So you look at him and you look at Davis, it does seem like the Orioles have regression and they lost Chen. The one thing I would say is I never bet against Buck Showalter. How he's done as well as he has with a relatively mediocre Orioles pitching staff for years and years and with them being so wishy-washy in the offseason, I've always been impressed with how well the Orioles have performed in spite of not being all that impressed with what they have on paper. So I don't like betting against Buck Showalter, but I agree with you. I think the Orioles look like this finally has to be the year that they really end up at the bottom of the AL East. I agree with you there. Over-under for the Yankees as far as wins go. if you had to put a number on what you expect as far as a record goes, again, I'll hold you to it, but of course it's extremely difficult to do. Nonetheless, what's the Yankees record in 2016?
Right now, I think they went between 83 and 87 games, somewhere in that vicinity there. So if you're going to maybe pick one number, I'll just go the medium and take 85. I think they'll be above 500, not immensely above. My opinion is this could change. Actually, in a month from now, when they do some more moves, we'll see. You know, like I said, the Yankees, I think they're one of the harder teams to predict because we just don't know about that rotation. If it stays healthy or somewhat healthy, they'll be good. But if they suffer two or three injuries like last year, they could plummet real quick.
Is there a player either in trade or as a free agent that we should should be looking at and saying, wow, we're not surprised at the Yankees? Have you heard any rumors about guys that could be on the Yankees' radar still this offseason?
Not as far as free agents. You know, I don't think the Yankees are interested in they're not bringing Cespedes. He's not coming. I think they were interested somewhat in the pitchers, but they didn't want to spend that much money. But I think it's going to be via the trade. I mentioned Gardner, wouldn't shock me if he gets dealt. And, of course, I still wouldn't be surprised if Angel Miller gets dealt. And the Yankees feel like, hey, we got Chapman now we can deal with one of these guys. That wouldn't surprise me at all. If, once again, if Miller can bring in that top bat or, you know, a pitcher. I think the Yankees will look for starting pitching all over the place to see if someone's willing to pony up. I think it's spring training, you know, someone goes down, and after they go down, well, Gardner's more valuable now. So if you're on a contending team, you know, if that can happen, absolutely, I think the Yankees will be interested. So, like I said, one shot being the least, if Gardner or Miller is dealt, a player coming back, I'd be shocked if it wasn't a starting pitcher.
And as we do this wraparound series for Major League Baseball with George Kurtz from SiriusXM Radio as well as RotoExperts.com, if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at George Kurtz. And, George, every guest we have on the program, the podcast is named A Podcast to Be Named Later, so I like to give every guest an opportunity to submit their suggestions for an actual name. Do you have a name that we should name this podcast? Get rid of the A Podcast to Be Named Later and actually give it a name. Any suggestions or thoughts?
I think you know what I always name everything I do, including my powers for the record. Baseballs, clearing the bases, or around the horn, but that's already taken by a couple of things. So, how about the diamond?
A diamond?
In the rough. There you go. A diamond in the rough.
I like that you at least came up with a suggestion. All the other guests so far, and I don't know if they were brown nosing or I caught them off guard, because I don't tell people that I'm going to ask this question. But they've all said that they like the name, and I actually like the name. But nonetheless, the fact that you came up with a suggestion, either clearing the bases, which is what the podcast was originally named, or the diamond in the rough. Either way, I like that you came up with a suggestion. I appreciate it. And, of course, I appreciate you taking out the time today. Hopefully we'll talk with you about some of the other major league teams, but thanks a lot for coming on and talking Yankees today.
Anytime, everybody. Enjoy the snow this weekend.
Absolutely. We could be getting heavy snow. That's George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at George Kurtz. He's writing everywhere, takes fantasy questions. Again, follow him on Twitter, ask him anything you want. He is a question machine, also knows a lot about the New York Yankees and Major League Baseball in general. That's our program for today, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to A Podcast to Be Named Later. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's at CJMitch73. If you'd like to follow our podcast on Facebook, you can do that as well. It's A Podcast to Be Named Later, strangely enough. If you want to follow my writings, I'm in a variety of different locations. I'm in the fantasy magazine for baseballamerica.com. They've got that coming out. They've got a preview magazine art series going, and you can purchase that over at baseballamerica.com. I made the projections for all the starting pitchers this season. If you want to read my online articles or find podcast links for the program, head on over to minorleagueball.com. I write about baseball there, and all of these podcasts are posted there. If you want to read my fantasy content, which is what I normally talk about minor league prospects, you can head over to rotoexperts.com. And if you want to read hockey, of all things, you can go over to fantasydraft.com as well. And if you want to follow the podcast and get alerted to when these will be airing live, you can always follow us on Blog Talk Radio. It's blogtalkradio.com/BoscoNation. That's right, Bosco Nation. For all of you Seinfeld fans of that generation, you'll get a sense of why I named it that. But it's www.blogtalkradio.com/Bosco Nation. You can just follow the podcast, and you'll be alerted when the programs are going to be airing live. But if you don't want to do that, or you want to also combine it, just follow me on Twitter, at CJMitch73. Thanks, everybody. We've gone through most of the AL East. We've done the Orioles, the Blue Jays, the Yankees and the Red Sox. We've got one team left, the Tampa Bay Rays. We'll be getting to them hopefully this week, but if not, the beginning of next, as we trek around all of Major League Baseball previewing the 2016 season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Hopefully you'll be joining us more often as the season goes along, and especially this offseason. Thanks, everybody.
Graduated to the high life, ball players, rap stars, addicted to the limelight. MC and May got you feeling like a champion. The city never sleeps, better slip you an ambient.